Welcome to What's Ailing America with your host, Dr. Rebecca Carlin, the world's only court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by BBS Radio, its staff, or management, and represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information that I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced disease syndromes, please go to the www.drcarly.com and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I went from being a surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. I do consults for people and pets with autoimmune diseases and cancer to teach them how to reverse these problems with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world. I do everything based on history alone and do not have to see you in person. Please call me at the number on my website if you would like to learn how I do consults. I ask you to consider the information that I and my guests give using your own God-given common sense and discern the truth for yourself. Myself and my guests love to answer your questions, so feel free to call in toll-free at 877-270-8714. You can use only your first name if you'd like. All shows are archived. Every week I will answer the question, what ails America, with a different response, as well as share the good news of what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet, for awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware of such things such as inoculations being the true weapons of mass destruction that are actually causing all these diseases, of other things that are being done and told us which are total lies, together we will be able to open our eyes and stop this holocaust on our health and our freedom. If you don't stand up for the truth, you will fall for any lies, but you should be uplifted as the weak-willed puppets of darkness are being made visible to the public eye through shows such as this, and the once feeble calls for cease and desist are now a roaring outcry. Tonight's show is going to be called What's Ailing America, the IRS, the Federal Reserve, and Other Related Scams on the People. And before I bring on my special guest, I want to dedicate the show tonight to two individuals from New Hampshire by the name of Ed and Elaine Brown. They were finally arrested, these tax, what do they call them, tax, let me just read you a little bit what it says in the Charlotte Observer from October 6th of 2007. And I am very much indebted to Ed Brown. He actually came all the way from New Hampshire to Long Island, New York, to be a court watcher in the Krupp case where they took my only child away from me. And so I know Ed Brown personally, and what these people tried to do for the people to show you what's really going on is just such a gift. But, of course, now they're in federal prison. And this is what it says in the Charlotte Observer from October 6th of 2007. Late Thursday night, U.S. Marshals posing as supporters entered the Browns' property and arrested them on their porch without incident. They invited us in, and we escorted them out, U.S. Marshal Stephen Monnier told the Associated Press. Through daily radio broadcasts and Internet postings, the couple had become a cause célèbre for tax protesters, a disparate movement that claims federal taxes are fraudulent. Show me the law and I'll pay the tax, Ed Brown said in an interview several days before his arrest. Don't show me the law and I'm not going to give you a dime. What part of that don't you understand? Now, of course, they don't mention in this article where the law is, and you'll be hearing about that from my special guest tonight, that there actually is no law for you to pay federal income taxes. But what really amazed me in this article was the following little statement that was made in the Charlotte Observer. Cut off from the rest of the world, the Browns said they expected help to come. The couple's ordeal would likely be over by the spring, said Ed Brown, when a warrior class will rise up against the Zionist Freemasons. Well, folks, those are the people that are causing the problem. And I'm not promoting a revolution. I'm promoting an evolution of consciousness. But once all of you realize how much you've been hoodwinked, you may actually get angry enough to do something yourself. And what I suggest you do is teach others what's really going on. So on that note, I will now introduce you to my special guest, who's going to be known as The Informer. And if you want to read truths about what he and others that he works with have written, the website you want to go to is www.atg, that's against the grain, atgpress.com. The Informer is by profession a researcher of 40 years and works for major 500 companies. He started his legal research into the government as a whole in 1979 and went heavy into the taxation part, all phases, in 1981 and continues to this day. He is retired and uses his cognitive skills of 40 years to continue studying. His history research came about because of the government research that uncovered many inconsistencies in what people perceive to be true about government, but which is not. His inquiries and study led him to other historical researchers nationwide. His findings show the governments are run by people other than the common man and woman of America, and that the government is not the representative form that people believe. So welcome to the show. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And actually, before we get into the income tax thing, one thing that I just wanted to ask you about that we had discussions with off the air is one of the things that you had done put you into working with something called Prussian Blue. And the reason I just want to ask you if you could explain to the listeners what this is, because I had done a show on water as a weapon a couple of weeks ago, and another individual that's in the know on these things has uncovered the fact that Prussian blue is one of those things that they're going to be using to poison people. Could you tell us a little bit about Prussian blue and what it is?
Prussian blue is a dye, and it's used in the mechanical industry. Many machine shops use it, and they coat the metal part, and then they take a scribe, and they scribe the, after it's dry, they scribe it. And now you have a layout of what you're going to mill or what you're going to drill a hole with or, you know, anything mechanical. And that's basically what Prussian blue is.
All right. Well, I know there's other things that there's another form of Prussian blue, and I'm trying to get the individual that knows about that to come on the show and explain that because this is very important information to people realize. And I just want to say, I'm not trying to scare people. The truth shall set you free. Knowledge is power. If you don't know what's going on, you're going to be ending up dead. So we have to realize what the people running the show are actually doing to decrease the population in order for us to protect ourselves.
Right.
So if you could just give us some information, Informer, in terms, I don't even know where to start. In terms of your digging back into history, we've spent some time on the phone discussing all this. You've taught me so much. And before we even start, I want to give one disclaimer. You're going to learn tonight that you do not have to pay income taxes, federal income taxes. However, I have chosen, although I know many individuals that know how to do the paperwork involved in getting you to that point where you don't end up like Ed and Elaine Brown in federal prison, and I'm sure they'll never come out. They will be killed in there. There's no question in my mind. There are people that have accomplished this. but it's not easy. It's very difficult. So I'm not suggesting to anyone to not pay income taxes. You have to pick your battles, and that's a battle that I have not picked. And I pay all my income taxes. I do everything legally in terms of that. But what you're going to learn from the informer tonight is that this is a whole scam, that there is no law. As Ed Brown said in that article, show me the law. They couldn't show him the law because there is none. And so he was not breaking the law by not paying income taxes. But because of the fact, I think the reason that they went after him with a vengeance to the point they did was because he was so well known in the Patriot Movement and so many people knew about him. And if he had been allowed to live his life, him and his wife, without paying income taxes, which are totally illegal to begin with, then that would have given other people the idea to do so. But anyways, if you could just give us some history on how did we become slaves?
Well, we became slaves way back, and it's so convoluted, and there are so many people with their hands in the pie, so to speak, or in the scam, that it's really hard to differentiate when you're going into this battle, who you're going to pick to fight. And I went back to, well, at first I went back to 1066. I first went back to 1215 when the Pope and the crown. Now, there's two crowns. Well, first off, let me say this. People have core beliefs. The core beliefs were bought on by their mothers, their fathers, their grandfathers, the family, and the schools. And to shake a core belief is so hard that it's next to impossible. It's like saying, well, your mother's not your mother. Well, their core belief is, yes, that's my mother, and this is my father, and yada, yada, yada. And even if you could produce the evidence, they still would not believe that their mother was not their mother.
Well, I have to interrupt you there, Al, because the listeners to this show do not believe anything. They are presented with the facts, and then they know. That word belief has a lie in the middle of it. And when they have the facts, those who have eyes to see and ears to hear want to know the truth. And the ones who do not want to know the truth, who just want to keep believing whatever, then they're going to be caught up in the whole system, and they're going to be killed eventually. So don't even worry about those people.
Oh, okay.
Speaking now. Well, the ones who want to know the truth.
Okay, I went back in 1215, and that's when Stephen Langton, who was the supposed to be the Archbishop in England, and the king didn't like it, and he fought, and of course he lost, and the Pope used him. The Pope is another scam, but the Pope used the Bible in such a way that the king was excommunicated. Now, to any Christian, you know, or in the Catholic part, once you're excommunicated, you can't ever get into heaven. So when I went back to find out what happened there, to come forward, I says, wait a minute, the history was so screwed up even then that it took me a while to grasp it, and I just put my skills as a researcher for these major companies into, I had good teachers, excellent teachers, professors from all over the world that taught me in the various companies that I was in how to do, what to recognize, what to look for, how to go into patents, and just the whole nine yards. So it was so convoluted then that I went back to the Geneva Bible, and I got a Geneva Bible, and it has the side notes in that King James took out so that people wouldn't know. Because remember, people didn't read back then. Very few people had a Bible. Only the clergy had the Bible. And so the King James Version is just that. It's a version. It's one man's version of what the Bible says, but that seems to be the standard. There's the Farfenton Bible, the Geneva, the Gutenberg, you know, there's all types of Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back and I found, okay, 1066, that's when William the Conqueror came in. And up to that point, the people in England were free. They didn't pay taxes on their property or anything like that. But when William conquered England in 1066, he bought in the law of Hammurabi. I said, now I got something else to look for. So at that time, I was doing work in the library. There was no computers back in those days when I was doing this. So you had to go to the library and dig into the libraries and find them. And I went back, and Hammurabi was 4,000 B.C. Mm-hmm. And Hammurabi, anybody can pick this up in Benedict on Admiralty, and it's in the 7th edition by Matthew P. Bender, and there's 26 volumes. It costs about $2,600 for the set.
What was the name again? Did you cut out Matthew P. who?
Matthew P. Bender. That is the publisher of it, and the book is called Benedict on Admiralty.
Okay.
Now, that gives you the history of how Hammurabi's law, which was the international law of the sea, of the law merchant, because remember, back in those days, that's all they dealt with, was law merchant by ships and through the various countries. America wasn't discovered yet, all right? So between France and Spain and Portugal and England and Sweden and Greece and Turkey, all those, and Palestine, you know, whatever, they were all by sea. And they used the Hammurabi law, which was Admiralty law. Now, there's many laws that are operating on the people today in this country. So, to make a long story short, I came all the way up and followed all the procedures all the way up to Rome, and Rome adopted Hammurabi's law. And then it went from there to Britain. Now, the law of the sea meant anything to deal with the sea. Even if a contract is made on land, it is still processed in the sea. And all the countries strictly adhered to that until America came into being. And it stayed in America on the ships and anything on the sea until 1857. 1857, they bought Admiralty inland, which was unheard of. And I had done many researches on that. And in the Internal Revenue Code or the Federal Register, you can see they have commercial crimes listed. And it includes, commercial crime includes just about anything you can think of. Prostitution is commercial crime. Anything stealing is a commercial crime. Having sex on an army post is a commercial crime. There's so many things that are in commercial that is what the country works with, is commerce. And the fact that coming up to this point, and I says, well, let me go back all the way back now to before 1776 to see what this country, and Washington was a real estate broker in the Virginia Land Company in 1753, and he made a ton of money. And what was is everything over here was owned by the crown. Now, everybody thinks the king, well, or the queen. It's not true. The crown is the city of London, and that is where the international bankers exist, in that little city. So when the Pope and the king were fighting in 1215, 1213, and everybody remembers when the barons took the king and held a sword to his throat to sign the Magna Carta, they're taught that in school, everything wasn't hunky-dory, because the Pope come out and said that the Magna Carta was abomination because it was created under duress. Now, everybody today knows that if someone holds a gun to your head and signs a contract, that's under duress, so it's not viable. It's not lawful. It might be legal, because there's a difference between legal and lawful. Mm-hmm. So what happened was that was blacklisted and was declared void, the whole thing. Because, you see, what happened is the king and the Vatican was fronted by the city of London in their battle and during the Crusades. So, to the borrower, he owes everything to the lender. And the borrower, you know, he's controlled by the lender. So both of these factions were controlled by the international bankers, which is the Exchequer of England. And so I then went a little further, and I figured, well, let me see what my coat of arms are, because I'm what you call a mongrel. I'm an American. Okay, now I'm an American, okay. But I am English, German, and Irish, and American Indian ancestry. So I rode over there to see what the last name was and the coat of arms, and I got the London Historical Society, and they sent me a whole plaque, and I got it on my wall. And what is interesting is it showed you the name, the last name, where it came from and everything. And in there it said, last names were created by the king's exchequer to collect all the taxes because there were so many people named John. You look in the Bible, there's no last name. Everybody's name was John or Albert or Joseph or whatnot. And you would refer to your lineage by Albert, the son of James, the son of so-and-so, and you go down the line. Well, because there were so many Johns, only a couple of the Johns were paying income taxes. So they created last names, surnames, in order to collect all the taxes from all the Johns. So John Black, John Jones, they normally picked a profession or where they lived. My last name, surname, that I had used, well, I don't use it anymore, was Valley People in England, and there's three different ways to spell the name. So right there, that clued me in to, okay, taxpayer is a last name. And anytime you use a last name, you're alluding to the fact that you're a taxpayer based on just this little thing that I had. I went in and I researched on that and found that the first person to institute an income tax on their employees was the Pope, the Vatican. So I followed that line, and it joined with the city and the king, and then it came over here, and then they applied the admiralty, and all the property in America was not owned by anybody, but the tenets of the Catholic Church says that the vicar of Christ, which is the Pope, assumes all of the land in America as its own. And remember, they had a fight. The king turned all of his property and even the people over to the Vatican when he lost the war with them.
But if I could just ask a question, let me ask a question, because in the Bible it does say something to the effect of, you know, you give unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Obviously,
right,
they're referring to taxes. How was that introduced? Because I'm sure that was not in the original Bible.
That was when Jesus come and said to Peter to take the coin out of the fish's mouth and take and pay the tribute to Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the King's Version. That's King James Version.
Because King
you won't find it in the Geneva Bible. You won't find it in the Gutenberg Bible.
Yes.
You won't find it in the Farfenton Bible.
That's what I wanted you to bring out, because there are so many people that take this King James Bible is the living God giving you his words, and it has
right.
been so corrupted, it's unbelievable.
Oh yes. I always tell people, look at the old school where you had 30 kids in the class, and the teacher would start at one side and whisper to the kid, and he would pass it around all the way, and she'd go over to the last kid, and she heard the story, and it's nothing like she said.
Right.
Now, that's just in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Imagine what happens in 2,000 years. Everybody that writes something puts their own spin on it, and you know that in government today. You know that it was lied when FDR actually wanted to start a war with Japan in 1933, right after he got in, but Sinclair, who was his lead man over in Asia, said it wasn't the right time to do it. And then when they knew what was going to happen, FDR let Pearl Harbor happen. In other words, to get the people incensed enough to say, we want war, because he already had planned this well ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very good book that you can get a lot of this stuff on, which is The Federal Reserve Conspiracy and Rockefeller by Emmanuel Josephson. I don't know if you can still get the book. I do have so much book. Everything I talk about, I have documented.
Mm-hmm.
Up the wazoo. So if anybody ever wanted to fight with me, I'd say I'd give them chapter, verse, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
On where to go, what to look for, and this is what it says.
Exactly.
Now, like I say, it's so, you know, it's so convoluted and messed up that for the average person to sit down and do this, they'd get a headache and they'd forget about it. It's too hard.
Well, that's why we need to hear from you.
But why I do it is because I got involved and I says to myself when Schiff and all these other people, well, Schiff used to live up in Connecticut, Massachusetts area, and he and I would converse on the phone, and I was following his lead. I did everything, and, you know, it sounds logical and so on and so forth. But then when I was in court one day and with me and my wife, and when the IRS came in and took my wife's bank account on a tax that they said I owed them, and I used Schiff's stuff, in the same day, the lawyer walks in and presents it to the judge that Schiff had just lost on the same argument up in Connecticut that I was doing where in the state where I was in. And right there, I says, wait a minute, something's wrong here. All these patriots are losing. There's got to be a reason why. And that's what started me on my quest to dig to the bottom and get to the bottom of it, just as if I was researching a new material for one of the companies that I was working with. And, you know, one thing leads to another, and it looks so easy, but then when you start digging and you start getting into different molecular structures and everything like that, it's not as easy as what everybody thinks.
Exactly, because the scam has been so convoluted, like you said. And so I just want to underline one big point that you just made, is that this whole idea of paying unto Caesar what is Caesar's was put in the Bible so that the Christians would be made to believe
right. That
paying taxes was their responsibility.
Yes. Yes.
And I just want to make one other statement, and then we'll get back to it, because even myself listening to you, it does get so convoluted, and I just want to make people aware that the IRS is just a collection agency. Maybe if you could talk about that, give the big picture, and then we'll get into the details about the IRS, what it is, the Federal Reserve, what it is, the IMF, and what it is. And that will give people a starting point.
Okay, well, the Federal Reserve was actually passing its own money in the 1890s. And what happened in 1913 is the Federal Reserve got so powerful because of all the big businesses, and there's an excellent book on the history of America in the corporate side, and they got so powerful that they had wangled their way in to using their scrip, which is worthless money, and in 1913, and that's when the income tax was passed. Now, here's what happened. The Federal Reserve has an arm in it of a collection agency called Internal Revenue Service. That was instilled upon American people back then, and because they never really created the Internal Revenue Service, all they did was create the office of the commissioner in 1861 when Lincoln did it. And at that point in time, Lincoln passed 12 Stat 319, which made every American the enemy of this government today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the 319, there are certain sections in there that I want to read to you. This was 1861, 12 Statutes, 319, 37th Congress. Being enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, Congress assembled. Now, right there, the United States of America is Congress assembled. That's it. It is not a physical place.
It's a corporation, correct?
Yes, it's a corporation.
Yes.
The little phrase, United States of America, the word of, in any dictionary, and anybody can pull it on any dictionary, means emanating from. Are you of your mother and father? Well, okay. Of is a possessive form. So that means America is the country, and the United States of, belonging to, America. Can you see where it's going now?
Mm-hmm.
Congress assembled is the United States when they're assembled. That's it, period. But it's they would take and say, Congress assembled of America. Now, they had declared by proclamation that the laws, now this is the key, the laws of the United States are opposed and the execution thereof obstructed by combinations too powerful to be expressed by the ordinary course of judicial proceedings. That is the enemy of the United States. And be it further enacted that such prizes and capture, here comes Hammurabi's law, admiralty, shall be condemned in the district or circuit court of the United States having jurisdiction in the amount or in admiralty in any district in which the same may be seized or into which they may be taken and proceedings first instituted. So ever since the first section of the 37th Congress in 1861, the people have become the enemy of the United States. By insurrection, and anything that you oppose, any laws that you oppose, you are the enemy. And people don't know this. Now, the IRS was then put in to serve two functions. One, the United States Congress creates statutes at large that define what is income taxes and, you know, what is to be collected. And on the other side, the private IRS collection agency of the Federal Reserve is also collecting their tax, which is the use of the Federal Reserve note. That is their tax. And all of that comes under the IRC, the Internal Revenue Code. There are two separate entities here being collected by one agency, and it's a foreign-controlled agency. And they report, if anybody pulls up 26 U.S.C. 7401, it's in section 7401, they will see that it says the Secretary of the Treasury and the Attorney General has to institute an action in order for an IRS to have the authority to go after you. Now, way back when, in the 1944, when the Bretton Woods Act was created, that created the IMF and the World Bank. The bank was for the reparations of all the wars, World War I, World War II, that we had to pay or any other country had to pay to the other country that lost. Now, what they did then is the IMF then took the money and dispersed it among the other 27 nations that have joined. And at that point in time, the United States became a participating member in the United Nations, which was actually the League of Nations, which was so corrupt that they called it the United Nations. That's what they do today for anything else. And what happened was that person who was now the Secretary of the Treasury was no longer the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States, because that was abolished in the year 1921 by the Act of 1920, when they abolished that and put the Federal Reserve in as the fiscal agent of the Congress to control the money. Congress abdicated its own position. It totally got rid of it. Too much to do, too much problems, and they weren't getting paid enough, so they turned it over to the Federal Reserve, and the GAO is the remnants of the Treasury people that were left. They created a new statute and took those people out of the Treasury and made them into the General Accounting Office, an arm of Congress. Okay. So at that point in time, the IRS would be only collecting the true tax that the Congress of the United States declared the people were liable for: alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. And you can find that in any one of the sections of 4000 and 5000 in the Internal Revenue Code. And, of course, truck and bus chassis, selling insurance, because insurance is all Tontine Maritime Insurance. It, under maritime, comes under admiralty, comes under international law of Hammurabi. See, as you see how it all starts coming back again, and all the way back to 4000 BC.
But then, so how did they get away with what they did to people like Edney Lane Brown? How did they get away with that?
When they go in and they say, oh, well, he's indicted for an income tax crime. Well, it's a commercial crime. Anything in revenue was thrown into admiralty, and it goes all the way back to the admiralty laws and cases that I have found, and I have them here. I have them stacked so high it would go 12 to 13 feet. Three books on each side, up to the wall, 12 to 13 feet. Now, like Ed and Brown, what they did is they bought in all these taxes, and they said, well, he violated this and that and that, and they owned the taxes. But what they didn't tell him was they were coming after him for private Federal Reserve note usage and not the tax that they claimed was a U.S. tax, and that's why they couldn't produce the law, because if they produced the law, they would come in and say 5502 of the Internal Revenue Code, or 5785, or anything that dealt with alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Everybody has an IMF, which is an international, which is the Internal Revenue Service's master fund, master file. That's the individual master file. It's not the the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. And in there, if you know what to go and get, you can pull it up, and it will tell you, and all the ones that I've looked at, and it's been over 70 of them, everyone has a code in there. It's all listed with codes. You got to get about $1,500 to $3,000 worth of books to decipher all these codes, and who's going to do that? They know this. They know the average American isn't going to do this. They don't have the money to do it. They don't have the time. They're raising kids. They're keeping jobs. They're paying for all their toys they got, their cars, their stereos, their, you know, the DVDs, the million-dollar house, the pool, the BMW. You know, they're working. I mean, I did that. I didn't do this until I got to age 41. I said, something's wrong with this country. And when I first started, I protested against Social Security because I figured I could take care of myself. Why do I need this? And when I first started a job, but, you know, you don't know. You're young. By the time you're 30, you're starting to realize something ain't right, but you're still going along, you know, your ball games, your beer, your booze, your nightly cavorting around, or, you know, and you're in your wife, and you got kids, and they're in school, and you got to figure, well, I got to get money for college and all this. So they know this, and this is why they get away with their doing. But when they did that for Brown and them, had they come in and says, oh, well, you're using Federal Reserve notes, and that is a use tax for the use of Federal Reserve notes to get what you get, and that's why your value of your labor is zero, because you've got the notes from us. Every Federal Reserve note that you get already has a lien put on it by the Federal Reserve.
Yes,
the minute
it's
issued.
Wait, because you're getting very technical, and I just want to help people that are getting confused understand that the Federal Reserve note is a debt instrument.
Yes.
Our money used to be backed by gold or silver, and now it's backed by debt, which basically, well, please do explain to the people what that means.
Okay, that's another issue where the money, people don't realize it, but the first international note used in this country was a Massachusetts Bay note. This is what brought this company up to where it was when it started to fight the war, the Revolutionary War, which a feigned war anyway, it wasn't real. A lot of people died, but it wasn't real in the fact that it was a war, because the king owned all the plantations over here. The crown owned all the vacation, all the things, because it fronted the money for both the Vatican, who claimed all the property here in this country. And what happened was the Massachusetts Bay note, and in fact, even Benjamin Franklin and Jefferson never said a word about the Mass Bay note when the Constitution was drafted. It was all done in private. The Constitution is not mine, never will be. I'm not bound by it at all. Lysander Spooner is another good researcher who was a legal mind back in 1811, died in 1871, I think. And he wrote the Constitution of No Authority, which it is. It is of no authority. And if it was of any authority, it was only for those people who signed it. I never signed it. You never signed it. Nobody else ever signed it.
As a matter of fact, I know of some people that tried to do this sovereignty thing to become sovereign unto themselves under the UCC code. And it involves why we have capital letters on our birth certificates and our driver's license and all these things, and we'll never have a chance to go into all of this. But I actually know of a case where they brought that in the Constitution, and the judge wrote back that they were not present during the signing of the Constitution, so they were not a party to the Constitution.
That's right. Yep.
Isn't that cute?
There is a case on that. It's called Paddleford versus the Mayor of Savannah in Georgia, and it's a Supreme Court case in Georgia. 14 Georgia 437, I think, but don't quote me on that last number. I'm just off the top of my head. Like Einstein says, why do I need to put all this stuff in my head when I got a book I can go to and read it?
Exactly.
So, but I do retain some of that. And in there it said that the man, the Paddleford, it was a tax case. It was a sales tax case. And they said that the Constitution is a compact, it's true, but the party is not, the man, Paddleford, was not a party to the Constitution, therefore he can't claim anything on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other case was John Barron in Baltimore in 1812, when the city messed up his wharf, and because they caused some drainage problems, and he bought the Constitution in fact, he bought the Bill of Rights in, and it's John Barron is the name of the case. I don't have the actual site on hand here. But the Supreme Court of the United States went in and stated that the Bill of Rights never applied to any people in the states. It was strictly for the United States. And they went into every section and detailed it, and therefore it says it cannot pass judgment or hear the case because John Barron was not a party to the Constitution and had no rights because he was, at that time, a state citizen. Now you can't even be a state citizen.
And they're so cute. And I just want to say, Bush has actually stated, and I don't know exactly where he did so, I don't remember, but Bush actually said, Air Bush, you know, our current selected president, that
right.
the Constitution is nothing more than a piece of paper.
Yeah,
so they're getting very cocky now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they are. And what happened is, let's go back to the Secretary of the Treasury. I myself got out of this and actually got a letter stating that I was no longer a taxpayer. And when I did file for another IMF for my wife, she was listed as never not filing and the same status as I was, because she was, I'm the primary and she was the secondary, and everything happens to the primary, the secondary is responsible. And then because the primary now is not responsible for taxes, neither was she, and they actually told me that I could not use the Social Security number as an identifier because it is invalid.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for me to prove who I was to the IRS, should I ever need to contact them, that was in the letter, I would have to go to a notary to prove who I was before they ever released any information.
Lucky you.
Now, who did I approach? Let me just, I'll play a little game with you. You know, who would you approach to file an administrative complaint on the IRS? You know, for taxes.
I have no idea. Okay. I have no idea, which is why
most people don't. Most people don't. Now, the ones that I actually filed the original complaint with was Chief Counsel of IRS, and the Service Center Director. That's it. Then after that, boy, you got to watch, because they try every which way to get out of that. And I started getting other service centers and sending me dunning letters, you know, like they do. And I very politely had the right comeback. And then after I got that letter from the National Accounts Director, then I filed for an IMF. And on the IMF, all the dollar figures was gone, all the way back to 1982. All the dollar figures are gone. But the codes are still there. I said, no, 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 no. That's not right. So then I wrote to the principals. And the principals are Attorney General Lyle of Great Britain, the Pope, the Governor of the International Monetary Fund, the Secretary of the Treasury of the Federal Reserve. That's it. End of story.
Mm.
That's who runs this country.
Wow.
Now, I got one phone call from the general counsel in New York and three letters.
Mm-hmm.
Little old me. Yeah, who am I? I got a response from the Holy See of Antioch. Holy mackerel. Just me. Little old me. I'm a nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody
yeah.
knows me, right? Why are they writing me?
Because they're scared of you.
Well, I politely answered their questions. And you've got to know exactly the words they use, because words in a dictionary are not used in law. They are terms, T-E-R-M-S. Anybody can pick up a dictionary, look up the word term, and look up the word word. They're in the dictionary, and you are going to be shocked at what you read. Every IRS or every statute starts out the term, yada, 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 yada. You pick up 26 U.S.C. 7701A and read all the definitions in the back of the book. They should be in the front, but they're in the back. They hide them. And you will see that every definition starts the term. Now, a term is a legal word not used in everyday conversation. It might be the same as in the dictionary word, such as person. Person is an artificial entity They can only deal with artificial entities because they themselves are artificial entities. And that's why you have a capital letters. Although there are a lot of attorneys out there that will say no and try to debunk it because they know the real story.
Mm-hmm.
And I had proved that when I went into my own case back here in 2004. I was playing with them. And I went into court on a driver's license issue, and that is also controlled by the United States. It's not controlled by the states because it's under Title 49, under transportation. And when I went in, I signed my first two given names, put a full colon, and separated my last name by about 2 inches. In small case. Even the first word, the letter, was small case.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that the Attorney General in North Carolina and the court never called me by my last name, never changed the heading, the caption page, or nothing like everyone else does when they don't like it?
Mm.
So right there shows that the research that I have done on last names, surnames, and capital letter, and when they refiled back their response in the brief on which I filed a mandamus, they never changed any of the words to capital letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I went sui juris, not pro se. Pro se is a privilege and can be taken away any time the court chooses to do so. And there is a case down in Houston, and I can't remember the actual case, but it's there, and it will tell you.
I just want to mention, because see, I went this route. I went as high as the United States Supreme Court trying to rescue my son Joseph after he was given custody to his abuser, and that's how I learned about the pro se versus sui juris thing. Unfortunately, I learned it too late, but I actually learned that when you say that you're pro se, you're basically admitting that you're incompetent.
Yes, you are. Uh-huh. And when you hire a lawyer, you're incompetent because in the lawyers, in the seventh section of the lawyer's guide, it says their first duty is to the court. Their second duty is to the corporation. And the third duty is to the client. The client takes bottom rung.
And I just want to underline that it's so important what you're saying, because people, they go out and they hire these attorneys, and I've had so many cases of legal abuse syndrome, which is post-traumatic stress disorder caused by injustice served out by the courts. They get attorneys, and they believe the attorneys are going to represent them. When their cases are fraught with total corruption and fraud, that's when the attorneys are going to screw them the most.
Right.
This always causes severe devastation to people. You know, for example, people that whose loved ones are killed in the hospital or whatever, and then they get an attorney to represent them, and then the attorney screws them on top of it, and it just makes them even worse. They're sicker. So,
well, it's all because it's under commerce.
Yeah.
And the whole thing revolves around commerce, because when do you ever see a court rule? Now, you and I, we have a dispute. Okay, that's between private parties, and that's about the best justice you can get if you're not represented by a lawyer, like in small claims court. So the judge is really sitting there, not looking at the commercial side of it or anything, IRS or driver's license or anything like that. Now, but if you or I were to go against a company, guess who wins? The company. The commercial establishment. They have to protect that company. Why do you think they'll never be a big revolt against drug companies? Because they're protected by Daddy, the Secretary of State that gave them incorporation papers to begin with.
Uh-huh.
Because the state is a corporation. If you go back and you look at all the towns that you go in, and you'll find out when it's incorporated. I went down to a little town that I was in when I lived, and I was about 30 years old, And I says to the clerk, when was this town incorporated? And she looked like a dumb look on her face, like, huh? I don't know. So I says, can I see your letterhead, that what you put out when you send it out to the taxpayers for your, you know, dunning letters you give them? She had to come on back. It was a small town, you know, so we went back. And the first thing right up the top, it says incorporated 1848. And I says, you just told me you didn't know, and you're using this paperwork, and you it's right there in front of you. You were incorporated in 1848?
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that. And she's supposed to be. Yeah, yeah. So what happened was, to make a long story short, every province in this country, like 1609, when it came into this country, they were plantations. Plantation, you get, and you look in the reconciliation of Burke, reconciliation of the colonies. They were all plantations. They were all corporations, because when you go back in the old days and you look at the plantation is a corporation. Corporations are the bane of mankind. So every Confederate state was a corporation of the crown. All right? It proceeded up to the war. Washington and Jefferson and Adams and all them, they had holdings in this country. They had holdings in their mother country. And when they was going to, they didn't like to pay these taxes and have no representation, so that was the reason for the war, among other things. But when it come down to it, the British troops never left this country and remained armed in this country, although we defeated them, until 1812. Now, in 1812, they created the war and destroyed Washington and the papers, so that abolished the Treaty of 1783, which was a precursor to the Constitution, because the king couldn't divest himself of any of the property to turn it over to the founding fathers, because it was a contract of the heirs between the original contract with the Vatican and the crown.
And I
and
just
the crown owned both of them.
We're already out of time. It just goes so fast.
It does.
Yes, and you've only just basically touched on the subject. We'll have to have you back on the show again. But basically, folks, I hope you're getting the gist of this, that the fraud and corruption is so huge. And I just want to also mention that most of the quote-unquote founding fathers, all but one, were actually Freemasons. And that is the reason that there are so many loopholes in our Constitution, that we are now slaves on the plantation and becoming more so every day, because they had planned this whole thing from the get-go.
Right.
So
Virginia,
I want to
Virginia debates, 1888. Everybody should pull it up, June 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Read that, and you'll see what Patrick Henry said, and go by his word.
And please mention the website again on which some of your wonderful writings are also compiled, as well as others.
It's atgpress.com.
And that stands for Against the Grain, correct?
Yeah, there's two Against the Grains, but this one is Against the Grain Press. The other one is another.
Yes, but I just want to say you certainly are against the grain, and I love you for that. And thank you so much for being on the show. And
okay.
If people have any questions, is there any contact information, or can they
When they go to the press site, they have a question thing on there that the people will answer, and if they can't answer it, then they funnel the question to me, and I answer it, and then they put it back on their website.
Great. And thank you for your service to this country. You are doing wonderful work. All of us that are trying to wake up the sheep to realize that this is the land of the free and the home of the slave.
Yep.
And it's time for us to do something about it. So have a good night, and God bless.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.